We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Sarah Wisserman is an archaeologist and a mystery writer. She puts her knowledge of archaeology to work in her books. She's now the author of 4 Lisa Donohue mystery novels. The most recent are The House of the Sphinx and The Fall of Augustus. Both are out in paperback. The House of the Sphinx, published by Hilliard and Harris. The Fall of Augustus, published by Wings Press. Sarah Wisserman is the director of the Program on Ancient Technologies and Archaeological Materials, a unit of the Illinois State Archaeological Survey at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And she joins me this afternoon to tell us more about her detective, Lisa Donohue, and her latest exploits. Welcome. Good to see you again.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here.
So when and how did you begin writing fiction?
I began when we were working on a technical report about our mummy project, our University of Illinois mummy project, when we were still up in the World Heritage Museum on the fourth floor of Lincoln Hall. And it was while we were pulling together all our material to write a general book for the public about the mummy investigation, all the CAT scans and x-rays and so forth, that I realized that my 3.5 years in that attic museum had led to something else. It's such a creepy, wonderful setting for a murder mystery. But I moved it all to Boston. But it's really that museum in Lincoln Hall that's depicted in 2 of my books.
Yeah. So was it Lincoln Hall and kind of, I remember that space as being kind of dark and quiet and
very crowded.
Very crowded.
We had a very small staff and we took turns doing everything from opening and closing the museum, giving tours, working at the front desk, trying to guard the galleries, which was sort of a joke because you couldn't even see around all the objects to see what people were doing. And the spookiest part for me was closing the museum at night and flipping all the light switches, ooh, setting the alarm, and having 30 seconds to run out down the back stairs.
Okay. So was that what led you to detective fiction?
I've always loved mysteries, and I grew up in a household of readers. Both my parents were mystery addicts. In fact, they fought over a mystery on their honeymoon. And my father wrote 2 unpublished mysteries before he died. So it was definitely in my blood, and I love to read mysteries. And I see them as being very similar to my archaeological work.
Sure.
It's detection and solving puzzles and working in layers.
Yeah. Now, in an email, you told me that your husband, who is a physician, helped with an idea for The House of the Sphinx. He suggested that you add some bioterrorism to the plot. Tell us a little bit about the plot of The House of the Sphinx.
Well, I started off with an archaeological plot, thinking that Lisa Donohue and her husband, James Barber, would take a delayed honeymoon to Egypt because they had gotten married at a time when neither of them could get away from their jobs. And so it was going to be an archaeological plot with stolen artifacts and things like that. But I was describing the plot to Charlie on the way home to Cairo from our tour of Egypt, and he said, well, that sounds okay, but why don't you add a little bioterrorism? And I looked at him and I said, such as? He said, how about smallpox? Mm. And it turns out there's a fabulous nonfiction book that reads like a thriller by Richard Preston, the same guy who wrote The Hot Zone.
Oh, uh-huh.
And it's called The Demon in the Freezer. And it's about what happened to smallpox research after people stopped getting it, how they discontinued making the vaccine, how the supplies of the virus ended up in only 2 places in the world, and one was the former Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody knows exactly what happened to those freezer supplies of virus when the Soviet Union broke up.
Yeah, yeah. It was a big story a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the premise of The House of the Sphinx is that Lisa and James travel to Egypt on a standard tour, and they stumble upon a plot to infect Western tourists with smallpox.
Maybe you would read from the book at a point in the story where we're not yet at that scary point, but where they're newly arrived in Egypt and they're at the Sphinx.
Okay. This is the beginning of chapter 3. It towered 40 feet above her, solid and sinister. The vacant eyes stared past her, the right side more smashed than the left. The missing nose only added to its visceral impact. The great Sphinx, built by the pharaoh Khafre, took Lisa's breath away. Awe swelled in her throat. She'd been studying sphinxes of the ancient Near East for the past 5 years, but the reality was so much more than any image captured in a book or on a computer screen. The great Sphinx of Giza was called Abu al-Hol, or Father of Terror in Arabic. Lisa thought he deserved the name. He was monstrous, huge, and timeless. Lisa remembered that in Greek, Sphinx means strangler. The Greek Sphinx, a female, was a mythical creature with the body of a lion, the wings of a bird, and the head of a woman. She was an oracle celebrated in Homer with the famous riddle asked of Odysseus, "What walks on 4 feet in the morning, on 2 at noon, and on 3 in the evening?" Answer, man. He walks on all fours as a baby, upright as an adult, and with a staff in old age. She mentally composed another section for a series of articles she had promised to write for her museum's magazine. The Great Sphinx wasn't always as exposed as it is today. 18th-century drawings of the Great Sphinx show it buried up to its neck with sand. Over time, several attempts were made to clear the sand, but the wind always brought it back. A massive restoration project led by Zawi Hawass, the head honcho of the Egyptian Supreme Council of Antiquities, has been conducted over the past 25 years. An international team studied the problems caused by pollution and the rising water table and prepared a plan for a long-term preservation of the monument. She swabbed at her face with the sleeve of her rather scratchy, sun-protective shirt and stepped back to obtain more of a panoramic view with her camera. The hollow feeling in her gut changed to an ominous rumbling. James was right. She who ate too much in a strange restaurant would live to regret it. Lisa hoped she would not be up all night clinging to a cold porcelain throne instead of dreaming about tombs and sphinxes. James appeared next to her. "Is the Great Sphinx everything you expected?" "And how," Lisa said.
It's got to be great fun to bring together your work in archaeology and share that with readers while you're also having fun creating characters that are fictional, although probably drawn a little bit on your own experience, and then adding, the mystery, the suspense. What have you learned about building suspense, about getting readers to turn the pages now over the last few years as you've written these books?
The trickiest part is when you want to inject information and some of the science of archaeology is to do it in small bits and to try to make it integral to the plot. And I tend to write short chapters. I think that helps. Not like Dan Brown. Some of his chapters are only one page long, and I think that's excessive in the other direction. I have no aspirations to be a Dan Brown. I'm not interested in writing that kind of thriller. But I think that all writers get better as they practice. And for me, the hardest transition was going from being a dry, dusty academic writer to writing mystery fiction.
What will Lisa be up to next time out?
Well, the fall of Augustus ends with the suggestion that James is going to take a job in Illinois. This gives me an opportunity to move the action here and write about my own community. But before that, they're going to take a trip to Italy. And I was in Siena a couple of years ago for a conference, and that strikes me as a perfectly marvelous place to set a mystery. And I could include art and conservation and some other topics in a fabulous setting. So I took lots of pictures and notes when I was over there.
Well, we'll look forward to those books as well. Sarah Wiseman, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
The latest books from Sarah Wiseman, The House of the Sphinx and the Fall of Augustus.